New Kid in Town for you as a general theme song. Do you happen to remember that? I did that all the time on the radio with you. Until it wasn't true anymore, you weren't the new kid in town.
I know. Thank you. And by the way, congratulations to you, Lisa. You know, I'm sure your listeners know you were running for judge of probate. And you know what I loved about your campaign? I mean, I've been in the political business for a little while now, and I got to tell you, I'm not sure I understood all the ins and outs of a judge of probate. And those emails that you sent around where you kind of explained how it all worked was just amazing. I learned a lot. Thanks.
I'm so glad that you read them. I'm so impressed that they got to you. Thank you for reading them. That really means a lot.
Well, it's such an important thing that nobody knows anything about. I mean, unless you've bumped into the probate system, which is a pretty small minority of the overall population, you know, you might have no idea until you really should understand what's going on.
Yeah, we really represent a lot of people who are in difficult situations, really difficult situations. That's exactly what we do. That's why I like the job. That's why I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Well, congratulations to you, too, with a very decisive victory over Jamie Stevenson. Tell me a little bit about your reflections about your own race, Congressman.
Well, you know, I'm glad that it was a civil race. You know, no fireworks. That's consistent with what we try to do and have done for generations in the 4th Congressional District down here in southwestern Connecticut. You know, I praised my opponent in the debate for, you know, being courageous enough to say that, you know, election conspiracy nonsense that continues to be promoted by Donald Trump is just that nonsense. No, I was just delighted. I mean, I've been doing this for a little while in good times and bad, and I feel very proud and humbled that the incredible people of southwestern Connecticut decided that I should represent them for another couple of years. I mean, I think there's some pretty remarkable lessons beyond that. I mean, I'll give you one example. You know, Greenwich, Connecticut, which really was, remember, this is the birthplace of the Bush dynasty, and it was sort of emblematic Republican territory. I would include, by the way, New Canaan and Darien in those in that category. Classic, old school Republican districts. Greenwich, Connecticut, elected 3 representatives from the Democratic Party to represent Greenwich in Hartford, including unseating one incumbent, Kim Fiorello. And by the way, the state Senate race there, I understand, is in a recount. But
yes,
that's a tectonic shift. You know,
yes.
I mean, I was the DTC chair in Greenwich. Gosh, what would it have been? Almost 20 years ago. And we didn't dream that we would win, you know, even one seat in the state house, much less 3. So, man, if that doesn't tell you something about the change in the area, it's just remarkable.
Well, and Livy Florin represented the 151st forever as an unopposed Republican. Do you remember that?
Exactly.
Unopposed exactly. Republican. No Democrat dared to take her on. She was very well liked. She was considered to be, you know, the kind of across the aisle, old fashioned kind of politician of any party who you could talk to and be reasonable with. She was personally extremely well liked. And then when she left, it sort of wiggled around a little bit. It stayed, as you said, in Republican hands, but relatively briefly before it is now flipping to a Democrat that I wasn't even on my radar. And I like to think that everyone is on my radar.
No, it's remarkable. And you're right about Livy Florin. Livy was a very old school Republican. She was actually a delight to work with as a Democrat, you know, because she was really nonpartisan. She was, you know, happily Republican. But, yeah, different era. And, you know, her successor, Kim Fiorello, was one of the more aggressive kind of conservative advocates out there. So big change in that district. And that district, which I think of as one of the most Republican districts in the state, said no and elected a Democrat. I mean, you may remember, you know, there it used to be that the only way a Democrat would get elected in the town of Greenwich was if there was a disaster. And when the bridge fell down on 95 and for, you know, a year plus there was traffic going through downtown Greenwich, they elected a Democrat. You know, and there I can remember one Democratic first selectman of 20 years ago or so, Dick Bergstresser, who kind of came in because there was a whole scandal around the beach. But other than that, you know, the idea that Republicans would lose in Greenwich would be inconceivable. And that
and it was Bush
changed.
Territory. And so you look at the Republican Party, it is very far away from what the Bushes represented.
Well, yeah, that's right. And yeah, there's a real lesson for Connecticut as a whole, for suburban areas around the country, certainly for New England, where And you know what's interesting? I do keep an eye on the national picture, too. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in the Senate or the House. Very narrow Democratic majorities may end up being very narrow Republican majorities. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. But it's not going to be a big swing. But, you know, speaking of the evolution of the Republican Party, one thing that's very clear is that Donald Trump just got hammered last night, right?
I agree with that.
His preferred candidates are going down everywhere. We don't know about Georgia yet, but Pennsylvania, you know, Carrie Lake behind in Arizona, Lee Zeldin getting crushed in New York. Again, it's not my job to sort of opine on internal Republican politics, but holy smokes, the drubbing that the Trump candidates took was just remarkable.
Yes, and I don't know if you noticed, but yesterday Donald Trump said that if his people won, that he should get all the credit, but if his people lost, he should get none of the blame. And he didn't. It's sort of like heads I win, tails you lose. If I win the election, then I obviously won fair and square. But if I lost the election, then there had to have been some fraud.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, this doesn't surprise us one bit about Donald Trump, right? Of course, he said that, and he believes it, and I'm sure that pretty soon we'll start hearing why it was everybody else's fault but his own. You know, even though his interjection into the race obviously hurt a lot of people. I mean, right here in Connecticut, right? Dick Blumenthal's race, you and I both know Themis Claridis, right?
Yes.
And we think of her as a legislator,
yes.
As a proud Republican, but somebody who was pretty moderate. She was pro-choice.
Yes.
You know, I'm not sure you were going to beat Dick Blumenthal, but Themis, I think, would have given him a real run for his money. Instead, the primary electorate in Connecticut nominated Leora Levy, who was, you know, very much a Trump candidate, nominated by Trump to be ambassador to Chile, and she got dusted, absolutely dusted. So it's just, it really makes you scratch your head.
Well, I thought what was interesting, we're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, congratulations to you on winning the fourth. What I thought was interesting, though, was that it was approximately the same 10% margin of victory between Governor Lamont and Bob Stefanowski and Leora Levy and Dick Blumenthal. And I'd like to know what you make of that.
Good point. You know, both Leora and Bob, to a greater or lesser extent, did run away from the Trump label. Bob Stefanowski in particular,
yeah.
Obviously. It was harder for Leora Levy because she became so identified as a supporter of Trump during his presidency. Pretty remarkable. I mean, in my own race, it was interesting. I noted earlier that I had a lot of respect for my opponent because she sort of rejected the Trump conspiracy theories. But that didn't help her a lot in the 4th District anyway. So, there's obviously other things at play here in the state of Connecticut. But around the country, you look at Pennsylvania, where Dr. Oz went down pretty hard. And if I were a Republican today, I would be thinking like, oh, my God, you know, Ron DeSantis wins big.
He wins
really
Miami-Dade.
Big in Florida.
He wins Miami-Dade, which he lost by 20 points, won up by 11. And he wins Palm Beach County by 3, which he lost by a significant margin the first time. So he not only wins, he wins in places that he lost before, making him an extremely strong governor there.
Yeah. And again, it's not my job to sort of opine on internal Republican politics. But if I look at Donald Trump's win-loss record, okay, he won the election in 2016 and then basically has gotten obliterated in every election since. And I look at Ron DeSantis, who dominated in Florida. I'm thinking, holy smokes, wait a minute, who should I be nominating for the presidency? But you think Donald Trump is going quietly into that good night? I don't think so.
No, you saw that yesterday amidst his other statements. He actually threatened Ron DeSantis. Did you notice that? Did you see that? Did that come on your radar? It came on my radar. What he did, for those who are listening, is Donald Trump actually in writing, he said that he advised Ron DeSantis not to run. Otherwise, quote, unflattering things would come out about him.
Yep. What is it? What more can we say?
I mean, you know. Okay. Right. So now he wants. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Congressman Himes, I'm so happy that you're with us today. I know that you don't know yet whether you're going to have Johanna Hayes or George Logan in your delegation. I know that is being watched very, very strongly. Tell us here, what does it mean for you as a sitting congressman whether you're in the minority or majority in Washington, D.C. Tell us how truly significant it is for you to either be in the majority or the minority in D.C.
Well, it's big, of course. I mean, the House, unlike the Senate, the majority has all the control. So the role is very different in Washington. It's a little less different when I think about, you know, my job to try to bring things home to the state of Connecticut. The stuff that really matters to Connecticut has, even under, in the last 2 years, been bipartisan. I put infrastructure at the top of that list for all the reasons that you and I understand, Lisa. And the infrastructure bill, which we got done almost 2 years ago, huge investment in our infrastructure, was bipartisan. It was absolutely bipartisan. And so my hope is that, obviously, you know, what you hear on cable TV, if it's Speaker Kevin McCarthy, is going to be very different than what you hear under a Democratic speaker. But my hope is, because here's the thing that fascinates me. You know, we're not going to see a huge change. The Democrats have a 5-seat majority right now. And it's not crazy to think, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but it's not crazy to think that the Republicans could have a 5-seat majority come January. I mean, can you think of a smaller swing, right?
Yeah.
So now that creates problems for Kevin McCarthy for all the reasons that we've been talking about in this conversation, right? Because, I mean, he's got a 5-seat majority. He's got a, you know, ungovernable group of people.
But it's probably good for the country. It's probably good for the country because it forces people to sit down and compromise. And if there's one thing we know about America, it's most of us like to think of ourselves as somewhere in the middle. We do. That's why we still have an overwhelming amount of unaffiliated voters. And those are the people, I think, that spoke the loudest yesterday in Connecticut.
I think you're right. And by the way, let me note something else that's really good for the country. You know, we have our partisan debate, and that's wonderful. It's a strength in this country. The cancer of that was started by Donald Trump, by the way, that if you don't win the election, you say it was fraudulent, and you commit lawyers and time and energy and money, and you convince a big chunk of the American population. I mean, cancer is not too strong a word, right? That path is how our democracy ends. And you know what I love about this morning? Again, we may lose the majority in the House and the Senate, but I don't hear anybody who lost out there saying it was fraudulent. And that's a huge win for the country if that continues in the next couple of days.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for that, Congressman Himes. I will. I really will. Congressman Jim Himes, thanks for coming on. Once again, congratulations to you on your victory. And of course, I hope that you'll continue to be a regular here on the Lisa Wexler Show.
You bet. Thanks so much, Lisa. Take care.
Thank you so much. Congressman Jim Himes, with an extremely decisive, strong victory against his challenger, against his opponent, Leora Levy. Senator Blumenthal, hello and welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. It's my first day back on air. I'm so happy.
Well, happy birthday. Congratulations. And great to be with you yet again.
Yeah, thanks. It's not my birthday, but it might as well be. I'm just so happy to be back on air. You know, I've been off air for all these weeks. So now I'm back on air with you. So, Senator Blumenthal, congratulations to you.
Thank you so much. It was a decisive victory. I think a defeat for extremism, a victory for women's reproductive rights, and showed that Connecticut is still the land of reasonable, rational, steady habits.
And so when you look back on your victory and you think about what this means, what are your thoughts for Connecticut? I'm thinking specifically about the fact that we still have the largest bulk of our voters are by far still unaffiliates. And a lot of people thought and speculated that more and more people became unaffiliates because they had walked away from the Republican Party, but they were still perhaps persuaded to vote Republican in a particular election or for a particular candidate. What do you make of this? What's your read about the unaffiliated voters in Connecticut?
The unaffiliated voters are focused on the real challenges that we have as a nation, the rising cost of living and the need to bring back more manufacturing jobs to Connecticut and to the nation, which we've begun doing with the CHIPS and Science Act to bring back the semiconductor issue industry. But we need to certainly focus on economic issues. They're also very concerned about crime, and there's no reason that crime should be a partisan issue any more than manufacturing recovery should be. And so I'm going to be initiating, I hope, action involving a potential crime bill that supports the police, provides for accountability, but invests in the kind of funding that's necessary to support our police. And of course, choice is continuing to be on ballots around the country, and good victories in Kentucky, where an anti-abortion amendment was defeated, and in Michigan, where the right to reproductive freedom was enshrined in the state constitution, and here in Connecticut, where my opponent was, as she said, unapologetically pro-life. She celebrated the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and my 14-point margin of victory, or perhaps more, demonstrates that people of Connecticut, like all around the country, want women to choose, have the choice. We trust women. My opponent essentially trusted government or politicians to interfere in those decisions. So I think in a number of areas, there's a roadmap from the unaffiliated or independent voters. And an overriding point made in this election, I think, was that people reject insurrectionism, violent extremism. And Donald Trump's candidates who espouse election denial underperformed in this election, as did the red wave. You know, the red wave is still out at sea somewhere.
I'm thinking about this. Vermont, California, and Michigan had amendments to their constitution on the ballot that would have effectively prevented any legislature from taking away the right to make that reproductive health choice between a doctor and a woman. And in all three cases, it passed. I wasn't aware that in Kentucky, the effort to make it in the other direction failed. As of when I was looking at show prep, it was still being counted. So you know that it has failed in Kentucky?
It has failed. Okay. And that is a very big victory for the pro-choice force, particularly in a state like Kentucky.
Yeah, particularly in a state like Kentucky. That's true. I was thinking about this, Senator Blumenthal. We're chatting with Senator Richard Blumenthal and congratulating him on his victory here in Connecticut. You know, I was thinking, so I just won my election as a probate judge, and I think about things from that point of view. And Donald Trump appointed three judges within his 4 years to be the Supreme Court justices. And in each case, when those people testified in front of Congress, they said that they believed in the rule of stare decisis, which is to say the rule of precedent. Now, we all know that there are still precedents that now and then are overturned. But specifically with respect to Roe v. Wade, they were asked and they answered the question in a way that assuaged a lot of doubters that basically were afraid that they wouldn't leave Roe v. Wade alone. And one of the things that I think we can take away from this election is that if you're going to appoint judges, whoever they are, in whatever sphere, and the judges are going to go against the political will of the majority of the people, the actual will of the majority of people, then I think that you're going to see political consequences of appointing those judges.
I think that's absolutely true. And one point that people should take away from these elections is that the United States Supreme Court really is so utterly detached and untethered from the mainstream thinking of the American people on so many issues, on gun safety, on voting rights, and on now, of course, reproductive rights. The overturning of Roe v. Wade, I think, not only contradicted basic legal and jurisprudential principles, but also the vast majority of the American people. And not to say the American people want to tell women what to do. On the contrary, they think that this decision is intensely personal and individual and should be made by individual women. I trust women to make these decisions. My opponent did not. And I think it was a very important issue in this election here and all around the country. So I think that this result is a defeat for the Supreme Court. Not that justices care, because they're appointed for life and they think of themselves as above politics, which they should be, but not so contrary to the thinking and feeling of the American people. that they feel they can just overturn precedent. And, you know, the bottom line, your point is extremely well taken. They testified before the Judiciary Committee.
They did.
I listened to them.
They did.
As a member of that committee, say,
yes,
we will respect precedent like Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
And then at the first opportunity, they ripped it apart.
Yeah. I mean, be honest about who you are. Don't be dishonest. You know, if I was ever up and I was ever testifying to be an appointed judge, you know, I've been elected judge. I'm very proud to be an elected judge. I love to make my case to my people. But if I was ever in front of a testimony, and I know that judges are never supposed to say how they feel about something so specifically that they'd have to recuse themselves. So you walk a fine line because you don't want to have to prejudge a specific fact pattern. But notwithstanding that, you can generally opine about your principles and be honest about it. And ever since Bork, we've gotten into this habit of allowing judges to run for cover and say a ton of things that mean nothing. They mean nothing. And I think that the American people are frustrated with that.
They are frustrated with it, and that's why the Supreme Court has lost so much legitimacy. You know, its credibility has dropped precipitously, which is very, very dangerous for the court, but also for our entire system, because, as you know, the court has no police force. It has no armies. It has no means of enforcing its decisions other than the willingness of people to respect it and obey it. And so losing legitimacy and credibility for the court is a major, potentially catastrophic blow to that institution and to our system. And the court is doing it to itself. These wounds are self-inflicted. They did not have to make the leap of completely overturning Roe v. Wade. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, in his concurring opinion, in effect said to them, okay, I agree with you. We ought to chip away at it. We ought to reduce Roe v. Wade, but let's do it step by step instead of this major leap. Now, I disagree with the Chief Justice on that point, but he had what is commonly regarded by scholars and constitutional advocates as the principled way to deal with changes to established precedent, which is to go slow, go carefully,
mm-hmm.
deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
And the court under Alito and Thomas and the three most recent appointees took a different course, just very radical and extreme.
Yeah. Well, Justice John Roberts has always had an ear to the larger political out there. Remember, he was blamed by Republicans for being the decisive vote that approved Obamacare, and they all, you know, wanted to throw rocks at him. But he was very mindful of the fact that we had this new president, that we had this legislature that wanted Obamacare, and he didn't want to be the person that took the guts out from under it. You remember that? It was very real.
I do remember it, and it was a major defeat for the Trump cause of, in effect, rejecting the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act. But, you know, here's the bottom line, and I would just leave you with this. We face a major threat now to Social Security and Medicare. Republicans have said they are going to, in effect, hold hostage a vital measure, which is to lift the debt ceiling if Democrats don't agree to slash Social Security benefits and Medicare. And I am determined to fight that effort to cut benefits under Social Security or Medicare. I think we can reach bipartisan consensus on a number of measures, like implementing the PAC Act, the measure that provides care and benefits to veterans when they develop cancer or other hideous diseases caused by burn pit exposure, toxic chemicals on the battlefield. Veterans should be bipartisan. So should our national defense, as should also bringing back the supply chain, manufacturing here in this country, good careers and good jobs made in America. But if Republicans are determined to slash these programs, the extremist faction of the Republican Party, in effect, prevailing in the House, we are determined to fight them.
Senator Blumenthal, where are we going to end up right now in the count in terms of how many Senate Democrats versus Republicans? What does it look like right now? Or is it too soon to even know?
Well, it comes down to Arizona and Nevada, in effect. The Democrats there are in the lead by very small percentages. And then if Democrats win there, it will come down to Georgia, where Democrats would have to win in order to retain control.
Okay. Well, one step at a time. In the meantime, Senator Richard Blumenthal, thank you for being with us today on this Wednesday after Election Day. Congratulations to you on your victory. We hope you'll continue to be a regular here on our show and on WICC. And thank you very much for coming on the day after your election.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I'm glad we have a good probate judge in Westport. Very important office.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Senator. We have joining us right now a woman who really went for it. Stephanie Thomas was just finishing her first term as a state rep representing the 143rd, which included parts of Norwalk, Westport, and Wilton. She's a Democrat. And when Denise Merrill unexpectedly decided that she would retire, leaving a vacancy in the Secretary of State's office, Ms. Thomas decided to go for it. My friend who was at the convention said that she made the most compelling of speeches at the Democratic convention, and she won the nod after a not as bruising primary as it could have been. She went on for the big race to go against Dominic Rapini and very convincingly and persuasively won with a real majority of the electorate. We congratulate Stephanie Thomas, and she joins us right now as our next Secretary of State. Hello, Stephanie. Welcome to the show, and congratulations.
Good morning, Lisa. Congratulations to you as well. I'm happy to be here. I may not be as awake as I would like to be, but...
I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. But congratulations to you. Was there a doubt in your mind about victory, in your own mind, in terms of understanding the electorate and registrations? What were you thinking?
There wasn't a doubt in my mind, and it's not as ego-driven as you would think, but I've spent literally the last year speaking with people around the state, and you know how it is when you speak with a crowd, you talk to someone at their door, and what you're saying resonates with them. And I saw that from the smallest town to the largest city, young people, old people. So I felt confident that there was something in my message that was correct, and that hopefully people would vote that way, and the results would prove it out.
So tell me, and continue to educate us as voters, what are the primary duties of a Secretary of State in Connecticut?
Sure. First and foremost, especially given that we just finished Election Day, it's that certifying our election results and also interpreting election law. But then there's the business services side of the job, which is much larger. So if you're starting a business, nonprofit, all of that filing, your LLC, those annual reports you have to submit, all of that flows through the Secretary's office as well.
Yeah, they do. And I just want you to be mindful coming into the office as a small business owner myself, Stephanie, that there seems to be some triggering mechanisms within the software that throw people into not just noncompliance, but like, you know, they're no longer a business. And that's because they may have gone too long, unknowingly, frankly, without filing these required reports. And I hope that there's more of an effort on the Secretary of State's office to reach out to individual business owners before telling them that they're no longer an entity. Because that happened to me, and I didn't like it.
Absolutely. I am aware of some glitches. Most people may know that a new system was rolled out last July.
Yeah.
And like any new system, it needs some time and attention and feedback, frankly, from people who are using it to make sure we clear those up. And that will be a priority because I, too, am a small business owner.
That's right.
And I know what a headache it can be when you're just trying to do your work and all these roadblocks are put up.
Stephanie Thomas, as somebody who is now going to be in this office, are you going to get any training from Denise Merrill? Has she offered to show you how to do the job? Because it isn't anything anybody goes to school for, and it's a pretty big job.
Yeah, it's a great network. Denise has been very supportive. As you know, she endorsed me because I vice chair our elections committee now. In the legislature, I have spent the last couple of years working with many people in the secretary's office. So I know them. They know me. Many have reached out. I see my text messages this morning. But not only on the election side, but also business groups like Small Business Development Center, Chambers of Commerce have all reached out to me already because I've been speaking with them this whole time. And past people who worked in the secretary's office have also been very helpful in lending advice and thoughts. So I look forward to the next 6 to 8 weeks being very busy.
Are you going to move to Hartford?
No, not right away, definitely. We love our home in Norwalk. We plan to stay here. Once I get a sense of what the schedule's like and what the day-to-day looks like, we may make some other decisions. But you can't get rid of me that quickly, Lisa.
You like your town, huh? You like your city.
I do.
I know. Norwalk's a wonderful place. Hey, Stephanie Thomas, tell us a little bit about your family life, because I don't even think I know. Do you have kids? You're a young woman. Do you have kids?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for saying young. I'm not that young, but I have a husband, no children. I have a wonderful mother who is so proud right now.
I bet. And
siblings and uncles and aunts and, amazing friends, many of whom flew in to be with me yesterday, which was very special.
Isn't it great? I had my whole family with me. So my son flew in from Vegas. My sister came in from Manhattan in the middle of traffic yesterday. My kids, my daughter got on a train from D.C. to make sure that she was there Monday night. My son-in-law also took a train in from Manhattan. And everybody was with me that could be. My parents in Boca waiting for this hurricane that I hope doesn't hit them. But my Aunt Cookie, who made so many phone calls. You know, I had at least five people tell me, I'm voting for you because of your Aunt Cookie. Could you imagine? So
everyone needs an Aunt Cookie.
Everybody does. I should make that a book, Stephanie. That should be my next book title. Everybody needs an Aunt Cookie. It's true.
Let's collaborate. We'll collaborate and do it.
But, even before the voting was done, I closed my eyes and I said, there is a measure of success in life in knowing that the people who love you show up for you when you need them to. Yeah. Isn't that the definition of success, regardless of the election? Really?
Exactly. Looking around that room last night and seeing people that I've known since kindergarten, as well as people who just came on board as volunteers for this campaign. You know, it's really, it gives you the strength and the confidence, actually, to do what seems like the impossible.
Yeah, because when you announced that you were running, I mean, I was taken aback. I was just getting to know you as a state legislator. Was this always your ambition?
No, not at all. As you know, I've had a 30-year career in the nonprofit sector, and public service is part of my DNA. And I was very happy serving as a state representative. But when Denise retired, I said, wow, this job sounds like the ideal fit for not only my background, but my interests. Mm. And it resonated like in such a way that I felt that I had to do it.
Yeah, I felt that way when I was asked to run for probate judge. Absolutely true. And at the time, I was an unaffiliated voter, and I needed to join a political party, which wasn't a big deal for me. I was delighted to run. But as soon as I understand exactly what you're talking about, where you know that a job meets your skill set and your potential. you know, what you want to do in the world plus what you think you can do in the world. It's really nice.
Well said. Yeah. Well said.
Well, good luck, Stephanie. We're excited to see you in the job. I hope that you're not going to be a stranger to us on the show. We're definitely going to want to talk with you from time to time and get into the nuts and bolts. You know, a lot of people are very interested now in election counting. The world is now looking at us in counting, for example, Johanna Hayes and George Logan. Now, is the current Secretary of State's office in charge of counting those ballots here in Connecticut?
No. Each and every town does the counting, but the Secretary's office evaluates that and certifies the ultimate results. But that won't happen for a few more days. But each town, most people should be back in the office this morning doing any recounts that need to be done, any double checking, before they submit their formal numbers to the Secretary's office.
So when you say they certify, in a case that is very, like this election, which will be very closely watched, does that mean that Denise Merrill herself or one of her appointees will come down and watch the counting before certifying it?
Not typically, but if there is something contentious or something that seems like it warrants such careful attention, like a very close vote, then there certainly could be someone from the Secretary's office on hand. But every town's registrar of voters, as you know, there's a Republican and a Democrat in each town. They are the ones who manage the day-to-day of that count, recount, sometimes a re-recount. And it's really if any irregularity is expected that the Secretary's office will get involved.
I just want you to know that one of the polling places in Westport yesterday had a machine that broke, the machine. There's only one machine, you know, where the ballots go into.
Yeah, yeah.
And it broke. And as soon as it broke, this is what happened. There was a backup machine, and the backup machine was not good. The second backup machine, so basically the third machine, was good. So while people were voting, the ballots were being placed out with many watchful eyes, temporarily in a basket, and then under many different eyes, fed into this machine that eventually worked.
Yeah.
So they had to have three backups. They had to have a lot of backups at each polling place. That's my point. Yeah.
I mean, the good news is we do have backups. The news that everyone is well aware of in the Secretary's office, it's also one of my first priorities. We need new equipment, our optical scanners, the tabulators. The machine that most people, you feed your ballot into. They are about 22 years old, and many were made. So we will be buying new equipment very soon. To avoid.
Okay, and I've got one more question for you.
There are procedures.
Okay, yeah, good. Sorry. One more question from a listener, Stephanie, then I'm going to let you go. Josh Koskoff is coming right up. A listener from Greenwich wants to know, and I don't know if this is your call, they want to know if there could be a registrar of voters for unaffiliated voters.
It's a really interesting question that we don't have time to answer.
Okay.
But there were a couple of unaffiliated candidates on the ballot this year running for registrar, and it just leads to a bigger a conversation around how can unaffiliated voters make their voice heard when we have this town committee structure with Democrats and Republicans, and then, you know, it's very difficult to run as an unaffiliated. So please write to me separately, whoever your listener is, info@votestephaniethomas.com, and I'd be happy to have a longer conversation.
Thank you for that. And that's a good conversation to have on the radio maybe next time you're on. Stephanie Thomas, congratulations to you, really, truly. I know that you'll do a great job for the people of the state of Connecticut, and I wish you well. And please don't be a stranger here on the Lisa Wexler Show.
Anytime. Always a pleasure. And enjoy your victory.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Stephanie.
Okay.
Thank you.